If you've listened to the show for any length of time, you know that I'm a big fan of connecting with locals when you're traveling someplace. If you're just going to be inside the tour bus, then you might as well stay home. The best parts of travel for me are when you get out into the marketplace or into the cafe where you meet the locals and have a chance to interact. If you're also looking to experience this, then check out Explore Worldwide, whose local tour leaders will get you off the beaten track and into the heart of the adventure, helping you get past being a tourist, experiencing local culture, and finding places you would not find by yourself. And isn't that what travel is all about? If you're thinking about your next adventure, head to exploreworldwide.com to find out more.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 863. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about bridges, bodegas and bagels, Chinatowns, museums, and the MTA as we go to New York City. This is Chris Christensen from Amateur Traveler. Let's talk about the Big Apple, the place so nice they named it twice, the city that never sleeps, New York City. I'd like to welcome to the show Rebecca Cheval, who's come to talk to us about New York City. Rebecca, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm very excited to talk to you today.
And I'm assuming that you pitched me New York City because you thought nobody had heard of it.
Yes, exactly. It's this secret little place that just no one thinks to recommend to go to.
Instead,
we're famous for our discreetness as well as not being cocky about the city that we live in.
So what's your connection with New York first?
I've lived in New York since 2009. I grew up in Pennsylvania, about 100 miles away from here, and always really liked the city and enjoyed visiting my older siblings and moved here pretty much out of college. And yeah, I've been here now 14 years, lived in a number of different neighborhoods and just really very attached to the place.
And I kid, obviously, about New York and nobody's ever heard of it. But you pitched me that we should talk about it again because it's not the same as it was even just a few years ago.
Definitely. We have just lived through, it's 2023, and we are definitely still recovering as a city from the pandemic, both in a somewhat literal sense, in a way that many lives were lost in a very short period of time. And also the city had this sort of collective horror period where they were starting off on a really dark note here, but where there was a period for several months where things were so shut down that you would really just spend your days listening to ambulances drive through the city, and because there was no counter noise to them. And it was a time of great chaos and fear. Also, this was before vaccines, before we had really figured out how to treat COVID. They were putting hospital triages like in parks, because like under tents, because they didn't have enough space in them. It was crazy. And you could lay down in the middle of a lot of avenues and you wouldn't be hit by any cars because there was literally no traffic. And we have come slowly and with ups and downs out of that period into a sort of new version of New York, or at least a temporary version of New York, which, and the city is always changing, but people are definitely out and about. It's vibrant. There's a lot of tourists coming to visit, a lot of pent-up demand for tourism. But more than I think a lot of other places, New York was this place that a lot of people would come to work. It was a big commuter place, especially in from the suburbs. Mm-hmm. Our office attendance that makes is down much more than even in a lot of other cities. And so it's just really changed the way that people live. I did see a statistic this week that weekday subway ridership is at 70% of pre-pandemic levels. And while the subway often feels really busy, it's still much more spread out than it was. It's less rush hour centric. There's just way less people going into the office every day. I would say it's particularly changed office neighborhoods, which are mainly Midtown Manhattan and the Financial District. But it also changed residential neighborhoods because, in a little better of a way, because there are more people there during the day, during the week. So they're actually, there's more sometimes in a lot of places, stuff open for lunch, or there's just more movement a bit in the daytime in a lot of very residential areas than there was in the past.
And given that preamble, we'll get to our usual questions. Why should someone come to New York?
I think someone should come to New York for so many reasons. I think it's this incredibly vibrant place that really just exudes life. And I find walking around the city, it really just almost gives you energy. And it's also this vibrant, multicultural place where you can really see the way that there's so much commitment to the city and to the culture and to people really living in something resembling harmony next to each other, or at least ignoring each other and not getting in each other's business. And just there's so many different things to do. And it's so interesting to see other people's lives unfold in front of you in a really public way.
Let's get into things to do. If I had a week or so to spend in New York, what should I do? What kind of itinerary are you going to recommend?
All right. The first thing I'm going to recommend is that before you come, you pack very comfortable shoes, at least two pairs of them. Do not bring any new shoes. Don't bring your cute shoes. Yep, bring your cute outfits. That's cool. But wear very comfortable shoes. And again, you're going to want more than one pair of them. So switch out day by day. You're going to want to look at the weather. We do not have rainy seasons and not rainy seasons the way some places do. There's a really good chance. If you're here for a week, it's going to rain. Like, it just is. So you're going to want to bring some clothes for that. We have really hot summers and cold winters. You're really going to want to pay attention to that. And you're also going to be outside here. So that's part of why the weather is, like, I think maybe more, maybe not more relevant than in other places, but definitely very relevant. There's so many great things to do. And I'm going to say that part of what you want to do is split your days up into different parts of the city. If you're interested in going on food tours, which I would definitely recommend doing, say in Jackson Heights, Queens, which is a predominantly South Asian neighborhood, but really that bleeds into a number of different Latino and East Asian neighborhoods as well, where you can really see a lot of different items. There's a lot of street food. There's some definitely great food tour operators out there that offer walking tours of this area. If you want to do something like that, or if what you really want to do is see Central Park, you're really going to want to make sure to not try to do too many things in different areas of the city. On television, they may go from place to place in 5 minutes, but in real life, it's going to take you a long time to get from one part of New York to another. It's a very large city. I'm going to recommend that you spend, it depends how much of the city you're trying to see, but really break it apart geographically.
Okay.
I do definitely recommend spending at least one of your days going and walking around different neighborhoods in Queens. Some of the really cool things to do, other than all of the delicious food to eat, is to take the 7 train. So I'm going to recommend a lot of public transit. I think it's both really the ideal way to get around the city, but also a really important way of seeing New York. Public transit is really vital to people's lives. And it is really a lot of how a way to experience what people do every day. The 7 train is above ground in Queens, so you also get an interesting view out the window. If you're interested in having an awkward neck looking out the window, there's a really interesting, unique museum called the Museum of the Moving Image, where you can see the history of video and videography from its origins until today. And you want to go see that. You want to go do some walking around, maybe do a food tour.
And you mentioned food tours a couple times. Do you have a particular operator that you recommend for food tours in Queens, for instance? I know I have done food tours in Chinatown with Ahoy, and then I've done food tours up in the Bronx within Urban Adventures, but I didn't know if you had somebody who was your favorite.
I do think that there's a very interesting food tour company called Culinary Backstreets. They do a lot of different cities. And they do one that's particularly focused on street food in Queens. It's a walking tour, and they weave in together some interesting elements of New York as well as the immigrant cultures that are alive and well in Queens, Queens being one of the most diverse places on the planet, having representation from, depending on who you ask, anywhere from 150 to all 194 countries of the world represented by where people were born and then moved to New York.
And I should also plug imayrome.com. Brian from imayrome has been on the show before and runs food tours in Queens along the 7 trains. He's been on the show. I don't remember if he came on and talked about New York or not, but I've known him for many years, listener to the show.
That's really cool. Yeah, the 7 train, it almost in a funny way is like a real life Epcot monorail because it runs through
these
immigrant neighborhoods that are from really different parts of the world that are next to each other. And on the street, they flow into each other. But on the 7 train, you really get off and you're in almost like a different country. Sometimes it can feel like where things are in like different languages from the stop before or after them. They sell the different clothes and food, obviously, but also just a lot of different items that are relevant to those cultures. They'll have churches or temples, other religious institutions from different countries, things like that.
Okay, so we're doing one day in Queens, we're doing the food tour in the museum. Are there other things we want to do?
I think it depends a lot on what you're interested in, obviously, but there are some great sporting events out in Queens. Mm-hmm. You want to go out to see the Mets play in Citi Field, or if you're here during some special event like the U.S. Open is at Arthur Ashe, that's in Queens as well. Another interesting thing to do is to take the 7 train to the end. And there are other subways in Queens, I want to clarify. I'm sorry, I keep mentioning 7. But the last stop on the 7 is in Flushing. And when you get off in Flushing, which is actually the densest part of Queens, is like a very large Chinatown. New York actually has 6 Chinatowns, the smallest of which is the one in Manhattan, which is actually known as Chinatown. But the Flushing Queens is like the most elaborate Chinatown. And walking around it can actually feel a bit in some ways like walking around certain parts of China. And I have been to several different parts of China, mainland and otherwise. And there's a lot of malls that are just totally taken over by basically food courts with different kinds of specialty regional Chinese food. Mm. And that's one of the things that sort of the largeness of New York and the multifacetedness of the immigrant communities allow for is that you can really get, it's not just Chinese food, it's Chinese food from different provinces of China. So different provinces of China, they do often eat rather different things. So that's one of the things that you can see in a place like that. This isn't all about Queens. It's a lovely place. I'm certainly going to recommend spending at least 2 of your days during your week in Manhattan. I think that probably it's easiest to stay in Manhattan. I would personally recommend staying around the Union Square area. Most of the hotels are going to be in Midtown. But if you stay in one of the Midtown hotels, you are going to see more tourists in a lot of times than you might see New Yorkers. Nothing wrong with tourists, just maybe not what you came for. There are also often very good hotel deals in the financial district, especially on the weekend. Mm-hmm. So that can be a way to save a little bit of money in this very expensive city. Although you'd be helped out by
Midtown, we're talking in the 40s, just south of Central Park, and Union Square is down in the 20s?
The teens, my apologies.
The teens, okay, that's what I couldn't remember.
17th Street
okay.
in the middle. And it's one of the larger subway stations, Union Square.
Okay.
The largest definitely being Times Square, having huge numbers of trains. And then there was also a lot of trains in the financial district, but they don't really all meet in one place in the same way.
Right.
Or Times Square, they all really, you can make enormous amounts of different transfers within one station.
And when you say financial district, we're talking downtown at that point. We're south of 14th.
Yes, you are south of Houston. You're almost as far south as you can go. Mm-hmm. It's one of the oldest parts of the city. Some of the streets are actually still made of stones or other sorts of materials from previous to paving. That's the area that really first developed when New York Harbor was a fishing port, a place that developed both by the fishing industry and physical goods coming into New York, as well as actually the agriculture in northern New York, particularly wheat coming down through the, like, coming literally down, right, like from a place like Buffalo or elsewhere, south to New York, and then from the port going out to the rest of the world.
When Wall Street was the wall where the town ended. Yeah.
Exactly. And neighborhoods like the West Village and Brooklyn Heights were some of the earlier, like, suburbs and quotes of New York.
Countryside,
town.
Even.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Because that has always been such an important part of New York, a lot of the subway is sort of built to bring people to the financial district as well as to Midtown. And so it continues to be important parts of the city. Also, a lot of the centralized city government is in the financial district area.
Yep.
City Hall, literally, there's a subway station called City Hall, for example. And you could, for some reason, you were interested in interacting with the New York City government. I don't really know what that would be, but if you were, most
I try not to on
there,
my trips, but that's,
yeah,
that's just me.
I also, I've had very little occasion to do that, to be honest. That's also where, if you're interested in seeing like the Brooklyn Bridge, which is a sort of iconic thing to do in New York, to walk over the Brooklyn Bridge, you would catch that around there. In the very lower part of Manhattan. Almost all of the bridges in New York you can walk over. There are some that are definitely more enjoyable than others. The Brooklyn Bridge and the Williamsburg Bridge in particular are very conducive to that, and where you're really separated from the traffic. Some of them you're a little closer to the cars, not like in terms of being dangerous, but in terms of breathing in car fumes.
Right.
That's not as pleasant. And the Brooklyn Bridge is one that you see in so many pictures of New York with the double arches. And from those bridges, you see interesting views of the city. You can get great pictures, you know, things to post on Instagram or TikTok or whatever it is that you're up to. Show people to make them jealous of you. I also think another great way to see the city, and this is something I really recommend even in all weather, is to take the city ferries. There's quite a few of them. They're all basic. The public ferries are all either the cost of one subway swipe or they're free, depending, like the Staten Island ferry is actually free. The subway, at the moment, it still costs $2.75, but in August of 2023, it's going up to $2.90. Not a huge jump, but something to be aware of. But all the trains, buses, and the ferries cost one subway swipe.
And you say subway swipe, the whole deal in terms of subway tickets and things like that has changed in recent years.
Yes. People still call it a subway swipe, even ironically, if you are taking other forms of like public transit.
Right.
But yes, the easiest thing you want to do, and you're definitely going to want to do this before you come, is set up Apple Pay or Samsung Pay, etc. on your phone. And then you can use that. You'll be able to use that in a lot of cafes and other and restaurants and things like that to pay. But also it's the easiest way to get on any of the city public transit. So again, the subway, the bus, the tram to Roosevelt Island, the ferries, you just tap your phone and it charges you and you can go. And if you use it 12 times in a week, it will, then it goes unlimited. After that, it doesn't charge you anymore.
Oh, automatically. Okay.
That's how they've switched away from the buying unlimited cards. You can still do that, but they are planning on doing away with the Metro cards.
Yeah, I've got some Metro cards sitting right next to me that are probably no use for me anymore.
You can probably send them in. I don't know how really they're exactly going to do that. But actually, that's one of the, it's not exactly tied to the pandemic, but it was a sort of a plan that was in motion before the pandemic. They were able to use the opportunity of everything being so shut down to basically in 6 months install these readers in every subway station on every single bus. So the plan was like a few years they thought it would take. It's really helpful. It's much easier than trying to mess with the Metro cards, especially on the bus where you didn't have a good place to reload them. Yeah, that'll really be helpful for getting around the city. The subway, it's an adventure. Take it as much as you can. Get lost. Don't worry about it. Get on going the other way. You'll figure it out. It's very helpful with the map. The buses are a little more confusing only because obviously they don't go in quite the same set of set courses. But there are a lot of really great transit apps like that New York City has that you're going to want to download before you come or as soon as you get here. There's a My MTA app. There's an MTA Bus Time app. And if you're planning on taking any of the other commuter rails, for example, like if you're coming in on the Metro North or the Long Island Railroad, you want one called Train Time. I know I just said three different apps, but
that's
they're
okay.
Free. You could just download them all, and if you don't need them, delete them. But the Train Time app is, it has all the commuter rails, and it also, you can buy tickets for the commuter rails on that, except for the path. So that's very helpful. And right, so your phone, the Apple Pay, Samsung Pay, etc., will get you on the ferries, and they provide you with a really interesting view of New York. A lot of them sell drinks on the ferries, which you are allowed to enjoy, so that can be part of the fun. A little beer on the Staten Island Ferry as you're going by.
Do you have a favorite ferry line that you recommend?
I do. It's the Staten Island Ferry. Okay. It is you get it from Manhattan. You would take the one train to South Ferry, or several of the other trains go very close by in the financial district to get on the Staten Island Ferry. It's free, and it goes by the Statue of Liberty. It's a very interesting view of Southern Manhattan, Brooklyn, and New Jersey. I don't recommend going to the Statue of Liberty, but I definitely recommend seeing the Statue of Liberty.
And you don't recommend going because you're a New Yorker and New Yorkers just don't go to the Statue of Liberty? Or
there's just not very much to do when you get there. Basically, the thing to do is to climb up the Statue of Liberty. And I'm just not sure. We did it on like a field trip when I was a kid, but I'm just not totally sure what the point of that is as an activity. There's just not very much once you get there.
Okay.
It's very interesting to look at, but I think it's maybe better from a little bit afar.
Now, as I recall, when I did that, I did the Statue of Liberty and Ellis Island, which obviously has more to see for those of us whose families may have come over to Ellis Island.
But yes. I do think Ellis Island, yes, which is, those are often go together, although they are separate. They're not like, you have to get on a different boat.
They're different islands, yep.
Yes. I think sometimes people think, oh, like it'll be at Ellis Island or something.
Oh, no, yeah.
And it's not. But I do think Ellis Island is very interesting if you're interested in that sort of like late 19th, early 20th century immigration waves,
right,
which really did help define New York as this giant city, because it was a period of time in which like the vast majority of immigrants had to come in through New York. And it's really part of why people often think, oh, my family at some point lived in New York, because people had to come in through there, and then they dispersed west and south.
ButcherBox is sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler, and I just got my first ButcherBox. I've got packed with dry ice came 4 packets of ground beef, 3 packets of chicken breasts, 2 steaks, some pork ribs, and some sirloin tips. Now, I've got a great recipe for what to do with the chicken. At least one of those packets of chicken is going to become Greek chicken and rice. And if you go to chris2x.com, I've got a recipe there that's an Instant Pot recipe. But I'm not good with steak, and so I'm going to take advantage of the fact that ButcherBox has recipes on their site at butcherbox.com to learn some great recipes to do with those steaks. You can have ButcherBox deliver meat to your doorstep. Free shipping as always, curated to custom box plans. You can easily find high-quality meat and seafood you can trust. 100% grass beef, free-range organic chicken, pork-raised crate-free, and wild-caught seafood. Humanely raised, no antibiotics or added hormones. Also like the fact that I could recycle all the box and shipping material that they sent. Sign up at butcherbox.com/traveler and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional 20% off. Choose salmon, chicken, breast, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/traveler. If you got recipes for ribs or steaks, send them my way, as I send my thanks to ButcherBox.com for sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler.
I think Ellis Island is really interesting, especially if that's an area of interest to the person. It is at least a half a day of your time here, and so perhaps you don't want to devote that much time to it. Another good option, if you want maybe an hour or two version of that, the Tenement Museum on the Lower East Side.
Okay.
It's really interesting. They get into a lot of those same issues, but they also focus on how people lived once they got to New York, a little less about the journey here and a little more about what their lives were like. They have this old tenement apartment building that they've converted into the whole museum, and so you can see different ethnicities, different people based on their country of origin and how they might have lived, think businesses they might have been involved with, different elements of when they were living in New York, what parts of the city they lived in, and just a lot about the incredible amount of people and work and everything that people did in these two-bedroom tiny apartments with right. six kids, and the women were, you know, making clothes during the day to sell or doing these other sorts of tasks, mm-hmm. like using them almost as workshops, but also they were living them. And meanwhile, we all, New Yorkers still live in relatively small apartments, but nothing like how it was right. back then. That actually, a lot of rules about how people have to build housing with light and air and other sorts of protection come out of that era in which they were just allowed right. to build housing that was like right on top of each other with almost no protections for people. So anyway, that's all to say the Tenement Museum, it's in an area with a lot of interesting things. The Lower East Side, it's a very dense, also, again, very old part of New York. You can try some interesting, especially if you're interested in like Jewish foods, there's still a few around there. Mm-hmm. It's very close to Chinatown. Unfortunately, right. Chinatown in Manhattan was particularly badly hit by the pandemic and some anti-Asian sentiment, and also just the sort of intense density of it did both of that. The combination of those things didn't do very well. There were a lot of very large restaurants, like banquet hall restaurants, that didn't make it. So unfortunately, it is a little less of a Chinatown than it's probably ever been. There is okay. still very much remnants of that, and there definitely are still Chinese people living there and Chinese markets and Chinese food, but it's a dying sort of style, unfortunately.
I mean, it's always been a dynamic neighborhood because it was Little Italy. Little Italy and Chinatown are right there, one on top of the other, and a lot of what is Chinatown now was the larger Little Italy before people moved out to Long Island or wherever they moved off to.
Absolutely. And there is still a small part that is Little Italy.
Yeah.
To the best of my knowledge, there aren't any actual Italian immigrants living there. Maybe there's one or two today. I remember reading a story a few years ago where there was the last woman who had lived in Little Italy since she had moved from Italy to the U.S. in that sort of era passed away. And there are definitely still a number of very good Italian restaurants. And there's a major street fair, San Gennaro. I apologize to anyone if I'm pronouncing that wrong. I do not speak any Italian, but that's a big deal every year, fall, and that attracts people from all kind of other areas as well. But no, it's a very dynamic area. There's Chinatown, yes, that took over. I used to like to say that Chinatown ate Little Italy. I thought that was very clever, but I don't know, yeah. And so that's next to it. Yes, there's like an old Eastern European Jewish community, and some of that food of all of those cultures very much still exists. It's New York, so there are definitely still a lot of Jews living on the Lower East Side. Nothing like there was once upon a time.
Right, sure.
And then there's not really Irish restaurants, but there's remnants of Irish culture, particularly in sort of an area quite near there, Five Points in NoHo. So yeah, there's just such a history and a current reality of immigrant communities living basically on top of each other in parallel communities in this city. And you can see it firsthand today in some areas, and you can see the history of it in places like the Tenement Museum. And where I live, there's a 120-year-old Italian bakery, like two blocks from my apartment. And right next to it is a place that Italian place that's 100 years old that still makes handmade pasta. But that's
which neighborhood is that?
In the East Village. That's like on 11th Street near First Avenue. And the bakery is I'm going to mispronounce this, Vianero's. And then the pasta place is called Russo's. I buy the pasta from there all the time. I think it's really excellent. And Vianero's is very nice. They do baked goods, and then they also have a little cafe you can sit in that has like coffee, and they also have alcohol drinks and things like that. It's decorated from another era, right down the block from omakase restaurants and hip bars and a lot of Mexican food. These villages are a very mixed place. Those Italian restaurants, they are left from an era in which there was a lot of that community here. And on top of that, you have then on like 7th Street, still a lot of Ukrainian national home and Veselka, which is a Ukrainian restaurant, and a Ukrainian community center, which are, and some Polish places that are remnant of another era, a little more recently, but still quite a long time ago, when there was like a predominantly Eastern European community living in this neighborhood. And a little bit of each one sticks around where in this place.
I want to try something here a little different from what we usually do. There's 1,000 places we could talk about in New York. And you and I, even before we started recording, have already figured out that we could talk all night. If I said there were five things that you have to see when you go to New York, what would your five things be?
Oh, boy. Okay. That you have to see.
See, experience, or do.
I would say, I would definitely say that one of them is to take at least one of the ferries, either the Staten Island ferry or one of the East River ferries, and really see these interesting perspectives of New York.
Yep.
You absolutely have to ride the subway for longer than 10 minutes. Ideally, every day you do that to go everywhere you can.
I'm going to give you that one for free because you pretty much have to do that anyway. So yes, what do I have to see, though?
Okay, fair.
Count that against your five.
You want to see New York from above. So basically, which is going to the top of a building. I don't recommend paying to go to one of the top of one of, like, Top of the Rock,
the Empire State Building,
or the Empire State Building is another one. They're going to kind of herd people through very quickly, and they're also going to charge you, like, if you're lucky, $40. But if you're whatever, $100, and that's per person. So you're going to want to go to, say, a bar, for example, or a restaurant, and see it from there. Somewhere particularly that I recommend is the top of a hotel called The Graduate. It's on Roosevelt Island. So even though Roosevelt Island isn't something that's super popular with New Yorkers to go to, which is, it's a residential mainly island between Manhattan and Queens.
Mm-hmm.
So a really cool thing to do is to take the tram, which is you get on 59th. It's basically like an above ground
gondola. Which we saw on Spider-Man,
Yes. And while I don't generally recommend doing things in movies about New York, that one's an exception. It's a very cool view from the gondola. The gondola, the tram only costs one subway swipe.
Oh, wow. Okay.
You're not paying any more. And then like $6. And if you want to, if you go to the bar at the top of the Graduate Hotel, even though you are only 20 stories up, you have this incredible view of everything basically south of Midtown, south of 60th Street, actually. It's very appropriately named Panorama Room because it gives you simultaneously a view of Queens, part of Brooklyn. You see everything south of basically 60th Street in Manhattan and the water, the East River, the bottom of Roosevelt Island. It's a really exceptional view that I actually think even like way more New Yorkers should go see, and they don't. People have a thing about Roosevelt Island. But it's pretty great, yes. It's just like a really interesting experience.
What else would make your top five? I love this because I didn't know that Roosevelt Island would even make your top five. So that doesn't
make I don't think people wouldn't expect it, but I just think it's an interesting experience. If you can get yourself invited to some sort of cultural event, and I'm going to recommend a way to do that, I would say that. So something, for example, if you were maybe had from an immigrant background or several generations ago even, or something you identified with, or a church or other religious institution that you identify with, to reach out to them. Google's going to be your friend. Just say, you know, Sri Lankan Community Center, New York City, and find something like that. Reach out to them. New Yorkers aren't super friendly if you just approach them in the street or the subway or something like that. But if you reach out to them through more appropriate channels where they're expecting it, they will often be very friendly and welcoming. Okay. And to try to go to see if any of these groups that you might identify with, doesn't be ethnic or religious either. It could be a group of people who do yoga in the park, for example, if that's something that you're into. Right. If you were into running, there's meetup groups online that are into that. So I would just say really try to find something that might be of interest to you and see what events that group might be having when you're in New York and try to go to one. And it's a really interesting way to mingle with New Yorkers and hear about their life experience and just see what it might be like in a if you lived here way.
Okay.
And if that event happens to be in Prospect Park on a weekend, which Prospect Park being the largest park in Brooklyn, even better, you'll get to see just the myriad of multiculturalism. Oh boy. It's a narrow town. I'm going to say that you should go see some live jazz because that's my thing.
Not I don't know Broadway, if that's too but much, jazz.
Just
all right.
My thing. I do think.
It's your choice. It's your list.
It's my list. You definitely want to see some sort of live theater or entertainment while you're in New York. Broadway is incredible. The amount of talent that goes into those shows is just astounding. And every person involved is just incredible at their field, the top of their game. So it's not just the performers, it's the music. So let's say it's a musical, right? It's the performers on stage, it's the musicians, it's the costume designers, the lighting people, the people who make the sets. Even a lot of times the venues themselves are really incredible. If you're not interested in that kind of theater, I'm a big fan of ballet at Lincoln Center, which has a lot of the same sort of impressive elements. Doesn't involve people singing their words. I've never been a huge musical person. I know not everything on Broadway is musical, but most of them are.
Mostly, yeah.
It is very musical.
I've seen a wonderful one-person performance of Christmas Carol by Patrick Stewart on Broadway that was awesome. But yeah, in general, musicals.
Yes. No, and there are. And there's always a few serious ones going on. Honestly, there's not very much usually on Broadway at a time also. And it's very expensive. I will say, if you just want to see something on Broadway, I would recommend using the app Today Tickets. I'm sure there are other ones as well.
Okay.
Today Tix, T-I-X, unless we spell any words fully on the internet. Especially if you're open to seeing different things and more interested in sort of the experience than something specific, is a really great way to see what is having deals, especially last minute. There's a few other ways to get that, but that's a good way to do it without having to...
So this is where I used to line up for last minute tickets. Now I do it on my app. Okay, got it. Now,
yes,
we know how to do
that
still, but how do I find good jazz?
All right. So
since that's where you went.
Yes, there is a lot of great music in the city. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of small venues that I think are particularly interesting and are something I really enjoy doing on a regular basis. Some of them are every night of the week, so something like Arthur Tapp. So there's a number of very famous jazz places, and all respect to them, absolutely. Smalls and Blue Note, for example. But when you get there, you're not really supposed to talk. You're supposed to watch the show.
Okay.
So I personally prefer, especially you don't necessarily have so much time to hang out with your friends or your significant other. Maybe you do a bit more on vacation, but you're not necessarily like looking to not speak for extended periods to them.
Okay.
If you're like one night out or what have you. So I really like places like, there's a place called Arthur's Tavern. They have basically no cover jazz 7 nights a week in the West Village. And always interesting music going on. You sit at tables or you sit at the bar and you can just go in anytime and there will be live music. If it's crowded, you can stand in the back and wait for somebody to get up. The show times aren't so set that people like only come for, they come and stay the whole time. They don't. People are in and out. If you come in, you will get a seat, even if you might not immediately have one. It's also a place that they're very low pressure about you ordering anything. So if you want to like do it inexpensively, that's a great option. Another one that's also every night of the week, they charge $5 on weekdays and $10 on weekends, is a place called Cellar Dog. It's in a venue that used to be called Fat Cat, also in the West Village.
Okay.
Right by the Christopher Street 1 station. They have board games and things like ping pong as well. But they always, every night, have jazz playing. And you can just go and sit there. And they have beer and wine if you want. But again, it's very low pressure in terms of ordering. There's no, you know, minimums or anyone pushing you along if you don't consume enough. That kind of a thing. There's also a number of places based on the night of the week. I don't know how many examples you want, but I'll just throw out a few of my favorites really quickly. On Sundays in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, a place called Basic in the late afternoon, early evening. Mondays, late night, at a place called Backroom on the Lower East Side, which is a speakeasy. It's not illegal or anything, but you do have to walk through a creepy alley to get there. So it's more speakeasy than most places that present themselves as speakeasy. It's also really beautifully decorated on the inside and was at one time an actual speakeasy.
Okay.
During Prohibition, allegedly, so they claim. Who knows if that's true or not, but if you see the place, it's somewhat believable. On Wednesdays, there's a really interesting, I think, dancing jazz at a place called Somewhere Nowhere in Chelsea. This is the last one I'll mention, but it's on the 38th floor of a hotel, and so you also have a very interesting view of Midtown at the same time. Okay. To get that in with your no-cover, swingy jazz. And in a lot of these places, like, people are very welcoming, and definitely at both Backroom and Somewhere Nowhere, like, if you want to dance, there'll be other people interested in dancing with random people. It's just very much the that kind of a vibe.
Now, you've had some things that you've not recommended, but you've given us alternatives. So, for instance, we're not going to the Empire State Building. We're going to Roosevelt Island. We're not going to the Statue of Liberty. We're taking the Staten Island Ferry. Are there other places, other things that people think they're going to do that you would say, yeah, maybe instead?
I would say I wouldn't recommend going to the World Trade Center Memorial. I don't know. I think not. If you want to, by all means. I think a lot of people, myself included, like I didn't grow up in the city, but I wasn't that far away, feel like they remember September 11th well enough and perhaps might be more interested, if you're interested in history, in the New York Historical Society, if you're interested in the history of New York. If you're really into the trains, there's the Transit Museum, which basically is the history of public transit in New York, as well as you can walk in through a lot of the old different varieties of subway cars. The Natural History Museum is another good example. Is there kind of just other museums that might scratch the itch if what you're looking for is some like history?
I would say I enjoyed is not the right word for it. I appreciated the museum at the World Trade Center, but there are some of these that I have not seen, and next time I go, I wouldn't go back to World Trade Center necessarily versus go see some of these other things that I have not seen.
Absolutely. And I would never suggest that people don't go to Central Park. I think it's like a very lovely place.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think it's a park. It's a green space. It's really great for people who live in New York. It's a very mm-hmm. well-used space. But there's a lot of really interesting, very odd little parks in New York, including some, how do I put this, extraordinarily, absurdly well-funded public parks. They are privately funded, for what it's worth,
okay.
but they are public parks. So the money coming from isn't coming from the government, but it's coming from donations. So the High Line is a pretty well-known one that's been around for a long
sure.
time.
Sure, love the High Line.
A decent mm-hmm. amount of time, yes. That's really interesting, and I think a different park to see. A almost brand new one is called Little Island. Hmm. On like West 15th Street, and it's literally on the Hudson River, but the cross street is like between 12th and 15th. It is hard to describe if Willy Wonka made a public park and also had all of the money that Willy Wonka had to do it. Like, instead of spending it on his factory, he spent it on this public park. It was made by some very well-off New Yorkers, and they just decided they were going to spend an enormous amount of money basically redoing this pier into
it's
a very
in the river.
Interesting. It's the west side of Manhattan. There have been a number of different ports around New York City in different periods of time. Most of the stuff today that comes in either comes in Brooklyn or New Jersey, but
right.
the remnants of those ports are left. And over the last 20 years, New York City has made a lot of effort, particularly on the west side of Manhattan, to reclaim some of that old port space as usable public space. So in that you have something like Chelsea Piers, which has bowling and golf and a lot of large-scale venue spaces for things like weddings or fundraisers, events, that kind of a thing. And they've turned quite a lot of that space into just public parks. Officially, I believe, called the Hudson River Greenway, although I don't think anyone actually calls it that. But there's just up and down from Tribeca all the way to the top of Manhattan. They've redone almost the entire thing at this point, and there's great running trails and a lot of very useful and beautiful things. But some of the design choices have been funded by private money, and Little Island is one of them. There's also a few kind of splash pad kids water parks further south of there as well. It's just incredible to see. It's really fancy kind of country club things, but in public park form. And I think that's pretty unique to have that sort of combination of things. It's like very fancy, elaborate things for people to use, but that are really for everyone to use. Not to suggest that you go watch little kids, but it can be interesting if you are with a child.
That's not creepy at all.
Yeah, I know. But to see the diversity of the kids playing together, and also just the way that some of these things that definitely I haven't seen other places, especially publicly, exist there.
Now, one thing that was going to be the latest hip new place 4 years ago or so that you haven't mentioned is Hudson Yards.
Yes.
Does anybody go there?
That is a thing. I would not recommend anyone go there. There are people work there. There are offices there. There are condos there. There are apartments there. There are some restaurants there. The largest thing they built really to be like where tourists would go, they had to close because too many people were jumping off of it.
Which, yeah, they frown on, yeah.
Yes, and although they could have... It's also been the source of some controversy because they could have built it in a different way to make it so it wouldn't be so easy to do.
And that was the vessel.
Yes, it's still the vessel. You can't really climb up. You can only look at it now. I don't know if they're going to try to do something about that. I think it might be a little late because it's already built. I think in order to prevent people from jumping at this point, you'd have to enclose it in such a way that would make it like a completely different space. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's not something I would particularly recommend going to do. I don't think it's a terrible place to like work or live. But it did get a lot of hype. But
I was not surprised that you didn't bring it up because I haven't heard about it since. In the last couple of years.
So. If you want to see a lot of new buildings on the water, perhaps you might want to check out Williamsburg or Brooklyn Heights, like the Brooklyn Bridge Park area. But Williamsburg is an area that developed a lot in the last 20 years, really went from being like an industrial neighborhood to trendy, artsy, like hipster neighborhood in the early aughts to fancy condos.
And now we're in Brooklyn when you talk about Williamsburg.
Yeah. Yes, sorry. This is Brooklyn. You can get there pretty easily on the L train from Manhattan or the J train, the M train. You could take a ferry, as I've talked about. You could walk there over the Williamsburg Bridge. But the area particularly is by the Bedford L train and west of it. There's just an enormous amount of, if you're interested in seeing what like new condo developments look like in New York and some interesting things happening on the water. There's also a lot of, in the warm months, food fairs, something called Smorgasburg, and art fairs and things like that happen in that neighborhood. And there's also, similarly a bit to Hudson Yards, the Domino's Sugar Factory, which another controversial development project, as many are in New York, but they built an interesting sort of adult playground, not in a, just like sized for adults, not in a...
Got it.
Yeah. it's not PG way, but that they built as part of their development project there of the old Domino Sugar Factory where they actually used to like refine sugar, believe it or not, in the middle of the city. So that can be an interesting area. Brooklyn Bridge Park as well. That's another sort of, I think, more pleasant version of Hudson Yards. Also a lot of large new condo buildings, a very elaborate public park on another sort of converted post-industrial port area going on there. There's also a lot of very popular pizza restaurants. And that sort of touches the area known as Dumbo. This is also Brooklyn. That touches the area known as Dumbo.
Down under the Manhattan Bridge.
Overpass,
sorry.
I feel like they stumbled into that backwards. But you literally are under the bridges there. But yeah, I think that's an area that some people may have heard of, especially like had a famous moment 15 years ago or so. And it's still an interesting area, and actually today an area where a lot of tech companies are located.
Okay, I didn't know that.
In New York, yes.
So we're getting close to an hour here. And there's no way we're going to exhaust everything to do in New York. So I want to give you some chance to talk about getting back to some of your bigger themes that we were talking about earlier. Things that I really need to know before I go to New York, especially now in 2023 or later.
Things that you really need to know about New York. People are going to look different than whatever you look like and talk like. People are going to look different than you and talk different than you. And they may ignore you completely. Don't take offense. They're just probably involved in their own lives. It's definitely still very much a mind your own business place.
Mm-hmm.
So keep that in mind. I definitely think it's a place you want to plan a million things you're going to do and then don't expect to do almost any of them. Definitely a good place to go with the flow. We didn't talk very... We talked about food and didn't talk about food. Mm-hmm. I'm going to recommend that everyone eat at least one bagel, one piece of pizza, but not... Every meal, probably not more than one time, like every other day.
Now, am I getting my bagel from a particular place? Do you have a loyalty?
I'm very loyal to Tompkins Square Bagels, which is a place that still hand rolls their bagels and boils their bagels. There are many good places in the city, but I think that's really excellent. There's actually just opened a third location of it, and they're in basically the East Village and Gramercy.
And then in terms of pizza, am I just picking up a slice that used to be a $1, $2 slice and a Coke, or are you recommending someplace that's different than that?
I am not going to start a fight with everyone I know by only saying that something is the best pizza, because there's a lot of really good
pizza. You can say what your favorite is. It doesn't have to be the best pizza. We won't go there.
I do think in terms of like your classic New York slice, like Joe's Pizza is very good. There are a few locations of that. But I do think if you're going to have pizza a few times, okay, don't eat pizza that costs less than $2 a slice. There are places that advertise 99-cent pizza. I do not know how you could possibly make and sell 99-cent pizza, what the hell they put in it. Don't eat that. But yeah, basically a slice should cost about what the Subway costs, about $3. And maybe try one fancy pizza, one something like Pauly G's in Greenpoint, Brooklyn. And yeah, one Joe's and then one maybe random place if you're interested in just seeing what you might happen upon. Maybe don't tell everyone that you had the best pizza, because it will just start like a whole elaborate conversation. People have these strong opinions about it, but it's one of the things people have the strongest opinions about in New York, and everyone is 100% convinced they're right, because New Yorkers are pretty much convinced they're right about everything. I would also very much recommend having what New Yorkers refer to as halal food, which is mostly from street carts. It's most commonly lamb and rice, but it can also be chicken if you prefer, or a mix of lamb and chicken. And it can also be in a gyro, which is something Americans often pronounce as gyro. So it's like in a wrap, but there's something for the street vendors all over. A lot of the people you think are hot dog vendors are actually halal food vendors. It's actually pretty rare to see hot dog vendors on the street in New York now. And so I would definitely recommend trying that at least once. They're going to ask you, want it like red sauce, which is spicy, and white sauce, which is a yogurt sauce. Yep. Get it all. Just have all the works and try it, and it'll be an interesting experience, if nothing less. I would definitely also recommend like thinking of some, maybe a country you've never tried their food, or something you've maybe had once or twice but doesn't really exist where you live. Mm-hmm. And obviously that's going to depend on where you're coming from. But if you live in a place where there's a lot of Eastern European food, maybe try eating the Caribbean food in New York. If you're from a place where there's a lot of Caribbean food, which I guess would be like Miami or something, or Florida, maybe try eating some of the regional Chinese food and really seek out something that's going to be a different experience than what you are able to find in your city, because there's just going to be some version of things that are extremely unlikely to exist in most other places, in any given other specific places.
And if you had your three favorite restaurants, personal favorites, not the best, just a personal favorite, across all cuisines in New York, all boroughs.
Sure. There's an experimental restaurant called Fulgrances in Greenpoint, Brooklyn, where they have rotating chefs. And it's like a place, it's like an incubator chef restaurant where they'll come for 6 weeks or 3 months. And it's basically a person who like has been worked at a really high level but hasn't had their own restaurant, at least generally speaking. And so they're really trying to show off their skills and showcase, like, this is what my food would be. And then the place, it's run by a team of three French people. The food isn't generally French, but they have an incredible wine list. It's price fixed, and it's just really like a dining experience. You got to schedule 3 hours, probably, to eat there. And at least don't schedule anything after your meal for at least 3 hours later. Do you know what I mean? Otherwise, you will miss your show or whatever you have tickets to, et cetera, your friend that you're trying to meet up with. So that's definitely one of them.
And that sounds like, if I'm a foodie, that should be high up on my list.
I think so. I love it, and I try to go to as many of the different chefs there as possible.
Okay.
Oh boy, this is tough. On the other end of the spectrum, there's a very inexpensive place near where I live. It's BYOB, called Little Myanmar in the East Village. And they have Burmese food. For what it's worth, Burma is like a country that's currently in a civil war, and there's been some immigration as a result of that. Not that there weren't already some people here, already there were. But it's this little hole-in-the-wall restaurant. The food is, it's a unique experience, a lot of sour, a lot of different herbs than you see in most other cuisines.
I've had Burmese food, loved it.
Hmm. You are an extremely adventurous and well-traveled person, so I don't know that
I had it in San Francisco.
But there were probably also, I'm sure, Burmese people as well. Yes.
Yeah. And get the tea leaf salad is one of my choices at a Burmese restaurant.
They have such interesting, the way that they use Yeah, or like basically herbs as tea, I guess you could consider them, but that's like herbs, like as a green.
Yeah,
and really, like,
exactly.
So, yes, it's like just, it's very different than most other cuisines I've had, even from its neighbors. Like, it's next to Thailand.
Yeah.
The food is not like Thai food.
No, or Indian on the other side. No.
I feel like all the restaurants in New York are flashing in front of my eyes right now as we're having this conversation.
Best restaurant meal you've had in the last 2 weeks.
Okay, because what I was about to say is this place called Nonna Dora's. It's an Italian handmade pasta place in Murray Hill, which is not a neighborhood that generally you have a lot of reason to go to as a tourist. It's pretty residential. Nothing wrong with it. It's just, there's not.
Upper East Side, as I recall.
No, it's like the East 30s.
East 30s, okay. And it was in the East Side. I couldn't remember how far up. Okay.
No, it's fine. Yeah, it's small. You should make a reservation. Probably make one the same day, but just don't try to walk in. Everything is handmade pasta. It's not like a heavy red sauce Italian, which I do really enjoy, like that kind of Italian-American food. This is different, though. This is a bit more subtle. And even if you are gluten-free, they do some really incredible gluten-free pastas. They're all house-made, so they're not just serving you like the box kind of gluten-free pasta that a lot of places do. And I've actually had some of the gluten-free pastas, and you would not be able to tell if you didn't know. Like, they're that good. So that's really somewhere that I would recommend checking out. I guess I should say overall, I would recommend making restaurant reservations.
Okay.
It's even more so true than it was pre-pandemic. There are a lot of restaurants closed, and a lot of places are still having problems with staffing or whatever.
And we're usually going
so many people
to their website, or we're using OpenTable or Resy or something like that.
I would recommend looking at individual restaurants' websites to see what they suggest, but Resy is probably the most common at the moment. OpenTable is also useful. But Resy also allows you to do the Resy Notify thing. Not to hype them up. I have no interest in Resy. I'm just a big fan of putting like the Resy Notifies on places that say they have no tables. And then if something opens, you'll be able to get it. Also, I would definitely recommend eating Korean food while you're in New York. I very much love Korean food. And there's a lot of great places. So that's like another interesting, not unheard of, but not super popular.
As we get closer to our wrap-up, anything else you want to say about the trip? Last-minute suggestions of things to do and not do, things to know before you come to New York, before I get to my wrap-up questions.
Bring a reusable bottle for water and drink a lot of water while you're here. Again, seriously, I'm not kidding about the comfortable shoes.
No, you're not.
Maybe map out places you're going to get coffee or where you're going to go to the bathroom when you're walking around, because a lot of what you'll want to do is like walk around neighborhoods, and there are very few public restrooms in New York.
Okay.
Something you're going to want to keep an eye out for is like, where am I going to use the bathroom next? Not a very sexy element of the city, I know, but just a real reality. Oh, at some point you should probably, perhaps drunkenly, but also soberly is fine if you are not into that, try bodega food. Bodegas are the little delis on almost every corner in New York. They are almost always open 24 hours, and they have, they're basically like, they're kind of like gas stations without the gas part, like the market part of it. If you've never seen one, that's all, I think that's a kind of a good descriptor. But they do actual hot food, like freshly made hot food 24 hours a day. And a lot of New Yorkers eat it a lot. I would definitely recommend like an egg and cheese sandwich, for example. It'll be fresh. Like, all the ingredients will be fresh. It's not something that they're like pulling out and microwaving. They will crack eggs onto a hot top. Chopped cheese is like a also very famous Bronx sandwich that a lot of bodegas have. If they have anything super weird looking on the menu, you should maybe try it. Like a bacon and jelly sandwich is something that a bodega I used to go to in Bushwick had, and you're like,
okay,
who would eat that? And they're like, yeah, people order it. That's why we put it up there. We also think it's weird, but like, people keep ordering it. Whatever. I tried it. It was interesting. I'm not going to eat it all the time. It's a new experience. Yeah, that's where you're going to be able to get, if you're in almost any neighborhood, again, water, gum, cigarettes, ice cream, just a really running the gamut. Oh, beer, not wine, because that's different in New York, but beer, seltzer, that kind of a thing. You may want to consider, not that I would ever suggest doing anything illegal, but they will sell you individual beers at a bodega and give you a paper bag, and you can walk around with a beer in a paper bag and drink it like in a park or on the street with your friends if you'd like. Also, a heads up, marijuana is now legal in New York, and got off on an insane foot where there's just an enormous amount of unlicensed smoke shops all over the place. You will see them if you come here. Be aware. It's, you live in California, that's like a regulated marijuana economy. This is not.
Right.
This is something close to a free-for-all. You will see it. Just be aware that's going to happen. It's fine. It's totally, it's fine. But it's, yeah, don't be totally surprised. Something most people might not think about beforehand.
Okay. I have to put this into an episode, and as it gets past an hour, I know how much time this is going to take me to edit. So we're gonna start to wrap this up. You're standing in the prettiest spot in New York. Where are you standing, and what season is it?
Oh, it's definitely fall. Fall is definitely the nicest season.
I could have put money on that. Yep.
The prettiest, it's hard to say. I would say maybe like in the middle of Central Park, because you'd have all the fall foliage. And one of the things that's really gorgeous about Central Park is that you see a lot of the tall buildings behind it. And that's part of what's magical about there. You get the city and the park element.
Okay. One thing, just one thing, that makes you laugh and say only in New York City.
Like a rat in the subway eating a piece of pizza?
Like a rat in the subway eating a piece of pizza.
Sorry, that's probably not what you were thinking, but that was the first thing that popped into my mind.
But which pizza are the rat's favorite pizza? That's really the question.
They're just like that people are dropping food again in the subway, so they'll eat it all.
Now, are they dropping the bad pizza? And so I want to make sure that I don't get the same kind that the rats eat, because otherwise they got thrown away.
You drop something in the subway. Don't eat in the subway, first of all. But if you're, but people do. We've all been there. And they drop food. There's no way you're going to eat it.
Bend down.
And you're probably not even going to want to actually pick it up off the ground. And yeah, the rats come in. The subway was relatively empty for a year and a half, 2 years. So. Yep. They're pretty psyched that people are back in there and dropping the pizza. Also, just only in New York, you just see people's lives unfold in front of you. So, like, people get engaged, people break up, people find out crazy life information all just in front of you. We've all, yeah.
And if you had to summarize New York, the New York of 2023, in just three words, what three words would you use?
Vibrant.
Yep.
Is chaotic too similar to vibrant?
No, doesn't have to be. I'd give you chaotic.
All right. Vibrant, chaotic, and just, okay, this is two words, ever-changing.
Okay. I'll give you that as a hyphenated word. Excellent. Our guest again is Rebecca Chevelle, and we mentioned that you were from Not Just Tourists at NJT.net, but we did not talk about what Not Just Tourists is all about.
Yes, we are a travel nonprofit that gives travelers suitcases of donated medical supplies to take with them when they go abroad. It's a Canadian-based organization originally, with chapters across Canada, in the U.S., and some in the U.K. as well. And essentially what we do is collect surplus medical supplies, which are ones that people would otherwise be throwing away, but there's nothing wrong with, and also we collect donated suitcases and put the medical supplies in suitcases. So say you were going to any sort of underserved community in Mexico. This week I gave out two suitcases to go to Honduras. A lot of people take them to Cuba. You would take them with you on your trip, and you would take the supplies to a medical clinic or hospital and give them to them in an underserved community where they're often very much needed. And it also gives people a real connection to the place that they're visiting, has like a direct impact, but also really gives you a personal experience with that place that you might otherwise not see traveling.
And do you connect the traveler with, you're taking these to this organization or this community or this hospital or this clinic, or do they just start offering them on the street corner? How much are they doing? No. Is the traveler doing?
Sure. We, in addition to the actual supplies, we give people, first of all, I should say this, paperwork for customs. That's a big one that
got
people
it.
Ask.
Sure.
But we have been around, we're new in New York City, but the organization's been around for over 30 years. And so people have taken supplies to just hundreds of clinics in different places. So there's a very good chance that we already have a relationship with the clinic where you're visiting. We won't say you have to go to this place, but we do have a lot of recommendations of places to go. Generally, we recommend it's whatever is as convenient for you as possible so that people can really make it there. But also, if you can take it to as rural a location as possible.
Okay.
That's often where people need the supplies the most.
Yep. Excellent. Rebecca, thank you so much for coming on Amateur Traveler and sharing with us your love for New York. I know that you could have talked for another hour and I would have enjoyed it, but I would have hated myself later on when I had to put this episode together. So,
yes, thank you. This was great. And I apologize for talking too much.
Not a problem. Special thanks go out to the patrons of the show who help support Amateur Traveler financially. If you're interested in supporting Amateur Traveler because you've gotten a lot out of it, just go to patreon.com/amateurtraveler to learn more. I heard recently from Dino from the Albania Institute in New York, who said, I learned about your podcast on traveling from Mike from the University of the Pacific, including the series covering Albania. Wanted to send you a quick note on your wonderful work. Dino, thanks so much for sending the note, and always glad to hear that somebody from that country doesn't think we screwed it up too much. I'm thinking about doing a meetup in New York City. Speaking of New York City, when I am there in September of 2023, during the sometime between the 17th and the 24th, and go to the Facebook group where I'm trying to coordinate that. That's facebook.com/amateurtraveler. And with that, we're going to end this episode of Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. And thanks so much for listening.